Hey, this is Kitty, and I'm reading chapter 6 of Sex for One, and this title is called Genital Imagery. Okay. Around the age of 10, I wanted to see what I looked like, quote, down there. One afternoon, when the house was empty, I got my mother's hand mirror and went into my bathroom. Sitting by the window with sunlight pouring in, I looked at my sweet little child's genitals and was instantly horrified. There hanging down were the same funny-looking things that dangled from a chicken's neck. Right on the spot, I swore off masturbation and made a deal with God. If he got rid of those things that hung down, I promised to stop playing with myself, keep my room clean, and love my little brothers. After a couple weeks of abstinence, which wasn't easy, I examined my genital deformity again. Upon more careful observation, I saw that my left inner lip was shorter than the right one. I cleverly decided to switch sides and continue playing with myself until they evened up, and then stop forever. Throughout the rest of my childhood into adulthood, I masturbated with my finger on the left side of my genitals. I'm not good at saying that word. My inner lips never evened up or dropped off. I simply kept the knowledge of my genital deformity to myself. It was another one of the many things wrong with me, and I quietly settled into confirmed body loathing. At the age of 35, I still had an ugly mental image of my genitals. In the past, men had gone down on me, but I was always too uncomfortable to reach an orgasm. The thought of someone tasting my genitals struck me as being unsanitary. Worse yet, he might see everything. I could only allow oral sex to continue for a few moments before I pulled my lover back up on top of me for, quote, normal sex. After I got divorced, I was determined to try everything. Blake introduced me to oral sex as a main event, not just foreplay. I quickly discovered that my orgasms for oral lovemaking were very intense. Once, after a profound climax, he said, "You have a beautiful cunt. Let me look at you under the light." He reached for his glasses and I almost died. I quickly said, "I'd appreciate it if you didn't." Then I thought to myself, what kind of sick, perverted nut wants to look anyway? Evidently, I'd turned a bit green because he wanted to know what was the matter. I confessed to having stretched my inner lips. He looked at me in disbelief. Then he put his arms around me and said, "Honey, you're perfectly normal. A lot of women are made like that. Actually, it's one of my favorite styles." Lucky for me, he was a devoted appreciator of the female genitals and a connoisseur of cunts. Off he went to a closet, coming back with a stack of magazines. They were softcore porn that featured, quote, split beaver. Beaver was a slang expression for female genitals, and split beaver was the term used when a woman held her genitals open. I was shocked, but interested. How degrading for those poor women to pose in garter belts and black net stockings, exposing themselves like this, I thought. Nonetheless, I began looking at the photographs. And sure enough, there was a vulva just like mine, and another, and another. By the time we'd gone through several magazines together, I knew what women's genitals looked like. What a relief. In one session, I discovered that I wasn't deformed or ugly. I couldn't get over it. All those years of therapy hadn't made a dent in my body loathing. No wonder I'd never had oral sex and always wanted to make love in the dark. Just 30 minutes of viewing pornography had started my process of becoming, quote, cunt positive, which changed my life. Not long after that, I painted my first genital self-portrait. While posing for myself in front of my makeup mirror, I was flabbergasted to realize that all those years I had drawn the nude, women's genitals were never more than a triangle of hair. It was just another example of the degree of my own sexual ignorance and lack of self-knowledge. What a difference it would make what a difference it would have made in my self-image and sexual development if I could have seen pretty pictures of adult genitals in a sex book. At first, I disliked the word cunt. It was only used as a derogatory term. When men said it in anger, I heard it with fear and disgust. But when a lover said it with passion, it sounded sexy. Most women said vagina, but technically that was the passageway leading from the external genitalia to the uterus. Vulva was more accurate. It referred to the outer and inner lips and the cleft between. But that sounded like a car. I get great mileage with my vulva. Pudenda also meant external genitalia, but it was rather heavy. My pedantic pudenda. I've never heard that word before. Though I was a cat lover, pussy was too euphemistic and reduced me to the status of household pet. I would have to use female genitals exclusively unless I got up the nerve to use the gutsy old Anglo-Saxon noun cunt. One inspired day, I looked into the mirror and repeated out loud, cunt, 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 about 100 times until I started laughing. The word no longer held a negative power over me. In continuing the process of becoming positive about my genitals, I started using the word cunt in my writing and speech. In 1973, I joined with other feminists to plan the first NOW conference, N-O-W conference, on women's sexuality. During one of our early meetings, a friend asked, what would you like to do for the, I don't know what that word is, plenary session? Plenary? Quite spontaneously, I answered, I want to do a slideshow of split beaver for feminists. Almost everyone broke up laughing. For the benefit of two women, I had to explain split beaver was porno slang. I've never heard that either. One woman thought it was a very derogatory male term. I assured her that I could come up with a suitable name and produce the slides. In the conference flyer, it was called Creating an Aesthetic for the Female Genitals, which was the academic way of saying becoming cunt positive. I didn't care what we called it as long as I got to do it. I started calling friends, asking if they would like to pose for the first feminist pornography. The response was positive, and about 20 women plus two women photographers met at my apartment. It was a fantastic gathering. The lights and camera were set up in the bedroom and in the living room, and the women chatted while they trimmed and shaped their pubic hair in preparation for their cunt portraits. We took turns posing with our genitals in a natural position, the outer lips held open, and one exposing the clitoris. Oh, those are three different poses. We took turns posing with our genitals in a natural position, the outer lips held open, and one exposing the clitoris. Then each of us was given a mirror and asked to arrange our genitals in the way we thought they looked most appealing. There were oohs and ahs and other comments such as, how beautiful. Look at the pretty mother of pearl texture. And what exquisite coloring. Occasionally, there would be a spontaneous round of applause when a woman displayed herself artfully. We began to see designs, shapes, patterns, and made associations with nature. A shell, a flower, a fig, an orchid, and yes, even those dangling wattles. I now think chickens are sexy. I saw styles emerging. There was a classical cunt with symmetry, a Baroque style with complex folds and drapery, a Gothic cunt with archways, and a Danish modern with clean lines. There were many Valentine cunts. When we realized the heart design was the shape of a woman's genitals, when she held her outer vaginal lips open, St. Valentine's Day suddenly had a new meaning. We discovered that when the hood was pulled back and each clitoris appeared, the variations were astounding, ranging from tiny little seed pearls to rather large protruding jewels. In the dictionary, phallus refers to both the penile glands and the clitoral glands. we were changing our image from the female eunuch to the phallic woman. The distance of the clitoris from the vaginal opening also varied greatly. One woman with a clit close to her vagina said she could have orgasms with intercourse alone. I thought I'd discovered a new theory until a woman with the same configuration posed, and she said she always needed direct clitoral stimulation to have an orgasm. Another woman couldn't get her clitoris to pop out. She was convinced she didn't have one until she pressed a finger on either side of the clitoral shaft. We could just see the tip of her shy clit. Technically called an embedded clitoris, it was difficult to see, but it was easy to feel and worked just fine. The vaginal opening wasn't a hole at all, but rather soft little pink folds that created different patterns in each woman. We became aware of the differences in pubic hair and genital coloring. Some women had dark, thick bushes and other fine, wispy hair. One woman shaved off her pubic hair, and she was our futuristic cunt. The form of her genitals were stark and beautiful. Our colors ranged from pale pink to dark brown, and one woman had a two-tone cunt. Her inner lips were dark brown, surrounded by a delicate peach. Another woman, who had very dark brown genitals and black pubic hair, said her lover called her the Black Orchid. Throughout the evening, there was an animated conversation. There were also moments of silence as each of us became lost in our own thoughts. Toward the end, I closed my eyes and saw one exquisite cunt after another pass before my mind's eye. We were creating our own genital imagery, not the male version. Of pussies and beavers, but the women's version of the lotus flower unfolding for the new Aquarian age. I showed the slides to over 1,000 women at the NOW conference. When the lights went back on, there was a long standing ovation. Goosebumps covered my body as I had an orgasm with a multitude of feminists. Afterward, many women gave me enthusiastic feedback. Did you really have an orgasm with a multitude of feminists? Does she mean goosebumps covered my body as if I had an orgasm? Not sure. Several told me they felt dramatically changed by looking at the slides. Others said they, too, had thought they were deformed. One woman asked her boss for a raise the next day and got it. Becoming cunt positive had enhanced her self-worth, and she felt she deserved more money. A year later, I did a series of pen and ink drawings from the slides for liberating masturbation and included them in the slideshow, along with a picture of a shell, an orchid, and a jade cunt necklace. I felt it was such important visual information for women that I made myself say yes to every lecture request. Traveling around the country, I carried a slide carousel filled with images of the temple priestess's sacred clits or pornographic split beaver, depending on a person's point of view. The difference between porn and erotica was definitely in the eyes of the beholder. I showed my female genital slideshow in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Florida, Kansas, Colorado, and California. University students, women's groups, and many sex educators all had the opportunity to become cunt positive. After saying the word thousands of times with love from all the different podiums, I felt I had reclaimed the word cunt. Germaine Greer said it first in an article I'd read in 1969 titled, "Lady, Love Your Cunt," but she turned against sex after menopause. By the late 70s, female genital imagery was emerging in women's art. Until then, Georgia O'Keeffe's flowers were just flowers. She herself denied her floral paintings represented vulvas. Then Judy Chicago and company blew the art world's mind with The Dinner Party. Many of her 39 ceramic plates were designs of gorgeous cunts. A number of unknown women artists sent me slides of their paintings of cunts, including genital self-portraits, that were inspired by my pen and ink drawings. I also received a lovely stained glass piece that was fashioned after the decorative cunt drawing on the cover of my book, Liberating Masturbation. At one point, I halfway expected to see cunt designs on sheets and towels. A friend who was a textile designer made an interesting repeat of decorative vulvas for wallpaper, but it never sold. What did become popular was genital jewelry. Pretty little cunts and cocks made out of silver, gold, glass, and ceramic graced many ears, fingers, and necks. I even bought an erotic pot holder made by a craftswoman who had stitched an adorable cunt in the middle. A few new college textbooks on sex have included genital imagery, discussing the differences in both male and female genital forms. But very little has been done on the high school level, where it's most needed, with young kids developing sexually so early. We will be more civilized and humane when beautiful genital imagery, along with a positive attitude about masturbation, is part of the sex education of every American boy and girl. Now and then, there are signs of progress, though. Just the other day, I saw a friend's teenage daughter wearing a shocking pink pin that said, Viva la Vulva. That's cute. When everyone grows up with positive images of cunts and cocks, no one will secretly think herself or himself as genitally deformed. It's especially important for a woman to see genital imagery that includes the clitoris. Once a woman understands the role her clit plays in her sexual pleasure, she can always show her lover how to stimulate her orgasm. I once read a letter in one of the popular sex magazines addressed to the doctor's column that sent me into a rage. Under the heading, Large Vaginal Lips, a 20-year-old woman said she recently noticed that her inner lips seemed to have gotten very large. She wanted to know if masturbating could have caused it and what she should do. The doctor answered that large inner lips are in part hereditary and, quote, if, as a part of your masturbating, you pull on the labia minora, you could, of course, stretch and lengthen them. If the labia are so enlarged as to trouble you or make you feel too embarrassed to attempt intercourse, it's a relatively simple procedure to reduce the size. He went on to recommend a trip to the doctor's office, a little Novocaine, and snip snip, off come the offenders. I shall refrain from calling this doctor a dirty name and simply point out that he hadn't seen very many female sex organs. Another offensive medical recommendation is the clitorotomy, or female circumcision. A friend of mine, who was orgasmic with a vibrator only, longed to have orgasms from her lover's penis. She consulted her doctor, who told her that if some of the hood was removed from her clitoris, it might be more sensitive, allowing her to climax with intercourse. He only suggested the surgery, quote, might help. It was only a simple office procedure, a little Novocaine and snip snip. She had her circumcision and got an infection, which added 2 more weeks to the ordeal. When she recovered, she still couldn't reach orgasm from penetration alone. In my opinion, male or female circumcision is an unnecessary surgical procedure. While feminists rightly appeal to the World Health Organization to end the mutilation of girls' genitals in cultures that blindly follow ancient religious customs, they do not seem to see what's happening to our baby boys here at home. Male circumcision is not only unnecessary, it's barbaric. Imagine this kind of surgical procedure being formed on a newborn infant without anesthesia. Foreskins are perfectly designed to protect the delicate penile glands and have a wealth of nerve endings that enhance masturbation and partner sex. Researchers believe that up to 30% of penile sensitivity is lost when a foreskin is removed. And don't fall for the cleanliness rap as a reason for circumcision. Every mother can clean a baby's penis until he's old enough to wash himself. We don't cut off our ears because they're difficult to clean, and we can change our religious customs too. Jewish friends of mine had a bris for their son with the relatives in the entire religious community, in the entire religious ceremony, but without the circumcision. In my opinion, Sexual ignorance keeps us from making connection between the pain of circumcision and sexual dysfunction in men. We know our bodies hold the memory of pain in the muscles and connective tissue. Such memories would affect the penis as well. No wonder we have so many men who are fast ejaculators or experience difficulty getting and keeping erections. I believe the fear of castration is based on a cellular memory for circumcised men. Other castration fears come from the repression of male masturbation with the threat from ignorant parents of, quote, cutting it off. Why was America totally fixated on the Bobbitt case, in which a sexually frustrated wife cut off his tail with a carving knife? If you're a circumcised man, that doesn't mean pleasure in sex is totally absent. I've known many circumcised men who were great lovers without serious problems. It's about the degree of sensitivity lost without a foreskin to protect what I call the male clitoris. A man who feels good about his sex life and enjoys masturbation will like his penis. But for a man suffering from sexual problems, his penis is a constant source of disappointment. Or for monogamous husbands or Catholic priests, a penis can be a constant source of temptation. When my friend Blake was married and taking antidepressants, he said his penis was an ongoing reminder of his sexual frustration. Though he loved his wife, his heart ached for sexual adventures. He couldn't even enjoy masturbation for fear of getting caught. At one point, he got so angered that he actually thought about putting his penis on the window ledge and slamming the window shut. That castration image occurred more than once in his mind. After Blake got divorced and had a few flings, there was a dramatic change in the relationship he had with his genitals. He said he went for days, it seemed, holding on to it, free at last to play with himself any time he felt like it. Not long ago, he took a photograph of his penis in a state of full erection and mailed it to a girlfriend in Michigan. The note read, "Thinking of you." At one point, I did 16 drawings of male genitals so men could see all the wonderful variations in their sex organs, the same as with women's genitals. There are classical cocks with symmetry, Baroque cocks with complex folds and veins, and Danish modern cocks with clean lines. They come in an assortment of colors, beige, peach, pink, chocolate, lavender. But American men are so completely off the chart when it comes to their fear of homosexuality that extreme measures of censorship apply to the depiction of male genitals. We can look at pussies and split beavers until we're blue in the face, but let one erect or slightly turgid penis appear on the pages of anything, and the censors are there instantly. I think many men have an enormous fear of women comparing sizes or appearances of penises. They sure as hell don't want their wives admiring photos of another man's handsome member if they're convinced their own is small and homely. Meanwhile, women have learned to accept the fact that our boyfriends and husbands are constantly looking at other women's genitals in magazines like Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler, which have huge circulations. Do they make comparisons of our genitals? Does one man show another photo of a split beaver and say, "Boy, I wish my wife was built like this one with the fancy inner lips"? I seriously doubt it. I think they just look and wank in their own private fantasy worlds. Do I want to censor men's magazines? No. I'd like to see more pictures of men's genitals. Since I live in the big city, I can go to a gay man's porn shop and buy magazines that show me everything I'd like to see. So, until American men grow up, and some are already there, I suggest women get a friend and go to one of these stores for a safe hour of browsing the stacks. And if you live in the boonies, the next time you visit a big city, shop somewhere else besides the big department stores. It's only one woman's dream, but I believe when more men can really worship their phallus, guns and MX missiles will become obsolete. Imagine this great nation of ours being run by a government made up of men and women who love their genitals, love sex, and love their orgasms.